Start recording. I need to spotlight my video. Spotlight. Then you need to go back to gallery view so that you can see everybody. And put back to view gallery. And I'm going to temporarily put everybody on a mute for background noise. Feel free to unmute to ask questions or participate as you wish. And we go to share screen. And I believe, what is this? Zoom keeps changing things. Okay, can you see the text, Shmuel Bet Perek Yutet? You will see it up here? Yes? Okay, excellent. So this is where we read through the Perek last week, which is basically the story of David's return from the other side of the Yarden. If you remember, the Battle of Yarif, the Battle of Shalom, is takes place for the most part in the area of Yarafrayim, as we spend some time talking about. This is a kind of a Google map of the area. So you have Machanaim here, which is where David is based, and you have the Gilad here or Yarafrayim, where Avshalom's forces were, and the battle there. Battle is over. David is in Machanaim, beginning to contemplate his return home. His re return home is going to take him back south across to the Yarden's crossing here near opposite Gilgal, and then he will cross over and end up in Gilgal. Gilgal is more or less the same place where Yeshua encamped when he first crossed over the Yarden into the land of Israel. We'll talk about that at length in a moment. But this is a sort of to give you a geography of the area. And we spend some time looking at the issues. Essentially, the Perek divides into four major stories. The arc of the story is the decision, the conflict over the tribes to reinstate David as king because they had rejected him, because they had chosen the Avshalom, were sided with Avshalom. The war is now over, and the deliberation over the return of David is the first matter of business. That arcs from the beginning of the Perek to the end of the Perek over the conflict with Yehuda and Yisrael, and the conflict over whether or not to who should be, who has the right or claim to David as their king. We'll see that in a moment. And then in the middle, three interjected stories that are part of the continuation of as David left Yerushalayim, as David left and began the merit, he encountered the cursing of Shimon ben Gera. He encountered the story of Tziva, the servant of Shaul, who had taken and the conflict with Mephibosheth, and he had encountered somebody by the name of Barzillai Giladi, who had brought him food and provisions. And now he's going to, as he's returning after the war with Absalom, he's returning and he's going to encounter more or less the same three stories, although the flip side of them now as David returns. So just a quick review of where we were last week. The people began. I'm going to read this quickly because we read through it last week, but I want to make sure that we have the pieces of this map as we move forward. The people were quarreling, fighting amongst themselves, saying, it was the king, meaning David, who had delivered us from the hands of our enemies, who had saved us from the hands of the Plishtim. And then our understanding of this text is that there's an internal conflict conversation going on. The other hand, Atab Barach min ha'aretz, mi'alav shalom, he's fled from the land. He's run. He's escaped. He ran from Avshalom. Remember this phrase, Barach min ha'aretz, because that's what we're going to focus on today. But that's where what their claim is. And then on the other hand, Avshalom asher mashachnu aleinu met b'muchama, but Avshalom died in this war. V'yata lama tamach lishim lashivet. So why should you hold back? Why should you be silent about restoring the king to his throne? So in Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph, Shiftei Yisrael, the tribes of Israel, are having this internal dialogue about whether or not they should reinstate David as their king. They will. And we'll see that at the end of this Perek, they meet David. They meet him in Gilgal because that's the meeting point. That is, in fact, the point of invitation to go down to Gilgal. And if you remember on this map, just to kind of, I'm going to pull up an old map that you should. Can you see it? Everybody see it? It's an old map. You might remember it. Once upon a time, we used this map. This map, what I like about it, is kind of one of those essential maps. This is a Shofti map. This is really isn't Dovid. But you can see Gilgal on the map is very close to Yericho. You cross the Jordan River, and that's where Yeshua parks the camp of Israel in Gilgal right after the Battle of Yericho. And then from there, they begin the conquest from Yeshua. At this point in time, the kingdom of Israel looks very different, right? At this point in time, here's another map. This, more or less, is your kingdom of David and Shlomo, right? The same kingdom inherited by Shlomo. So it's a much bigger swath of land, right? You have from Yehuda and Edom in the south, Moab and Ammon conquered by David in the, unfortunately, what led to the story of Bathsheba. But you have the northern conquests of Syria or Aram, all of those nations that came into that battle. So David really has conquered the territory from Nachal Mitzrayim all the way to the Euphrates. That, for all intents and purposes, is the largest territory that the nation of Israel ever had a claim around. That was the Malchut David Shlomo. And that is that's where we are today. So obviously you can see that there's a difference between these two maps. But for our purposes, what I really wanted to focus on is the role that this Jordan River is going to play. Okay, the Jordan River, if this is Eretz Canaan in the smaller context, this is the other side of the Jordan. What is this is the Machanaim, here's the Yabok and the Arnon River, and this is all of Aram, this is all in the expanded territory. The Jordan River is the focus of our discussion today. Okay, so coming back to our story. In the meantime, Melach David shalach el Tzadok ve'el Avyatar ha-Kohanim lemor, dabru al ziknei Yehuda lemor. So while Shiftei Yisrael are having this argument, David turns to Tzadok and Avyatar, and he turns to them and he says, he sends them on a mission. The mission is to go to the ziknei Yehuda and tell them, lama tiyu acharonim la'shivet ha-Melach ha-Beito? Why should you be the last ones to bring David back home? All of Israel is talking about restoring the kingdom, the king to his throne. Why are you, Yehuda, not part of that conversation? You're my brothers, bone and my flesh. You are my own tribe. Why should Shiftei Israel be first? You should come too. You should be first at the party. In addition, Amasa ben Yefta, if you remember our discussion last week, was the general of Avshalom's army. So he was the general of the opposing team, if you will. Although Amasa is David's nephew, right? Yoav is David's nephew, and Amasa is David's nephew. So David has two nephews who are fighting each other in the battle of Avshalom. Amasa Tomru alo atzmi uvsariyata. You are my flesh and blood as well. I offer you the position of chief of staff, general, captain of my army, instead of Yoav. David has no angst about or replacing Yoav, who has caused him nothing but tsaros over the years. Replace him with Amasa, and you might actually get somewhere. And in so doing, he was able to bring over the hearts of the men of Judah. And they responded and said, fine, so come back together with all of your servants. We are ready. Now remember, the meeting point of all of this is in Gilgal. I'm going to jump to the end of the parak for a moment. Excuse me. Stay with me. I'm going to jump to the end of the parak. Right, at the end of the parak, the Melech David comes to Gilgal together with Am Yehuda, and there he meets Ish Yisrael. So the key is that the story will in fact converge at Gilgal, but we're not at Gilgal yet. We are still at this moment of a conversation. So in the meantime, back to Pasuk Tetzayin, the king comes down to the Yarden. And I, as we read through this last week, I said, suggested to keep an eye on how many times there's this emphasis and focus on the Jordan River as a part of the story. And not just an arbitrary, okay, you know, to get from point A to B, you have to cross the river, but really a significant component of the story. V'yuda, this is Pasuk Tetzayin, V'yuda b'ha-gilgala l'lechet likrat ha-melech l'havir et ha-melech et ha-yarden. So the Judah, they came down to Gilgal. Again, Shiftei Yisrael are going to come to Gilgal as well. But in the meantime, Judah ran first because they're closer, and they got to Gilgal first, and they crossed over to meet the king in order to bring him over the Jordan. So they didn't wait in Gilgal. They went a little further to the edge of the Yarden and maybe even across it to bring the king over the Yarden. Why that's significant is part of what we want to explore. Okay. In the meantime, that's part one. And from here, from Pasuk Tetzayin, if I went from Pasuk Tetzayin straight to Pasuk Mem Aleph, right, if I jumped from Tetzayin to Mem Aleph, we'd have one continuous story, right? Yehuda goes across to bring David across the Yarden. In the meantime, Shiftei Yisrael meet in Gilgal, and now there's a whole tension between them over who's got a bigger claim to the king, whether it's Shiftei Yisrael or Yehuda, and those are the psukim at the end of the story. We're going to jump again. I'm going to come back to these psukim, but I'm going to jump again to Pasuk Mem, the end, or Mem Aleph. In the meantime, Yavo HaMelech HaGilgala, so that picks up where we left off, right? Yehuda went across to bring Judah across, together with Kimhan, the son of Barzillai Giladi. We'll come back to him in a minute. V'chol Am Yehuda heviru et HaMelech v'gam chatzi Am Yisrael. They brought together with the people of Judah, together with a small delegation of Israel, not half, but a small delegation of Shiftei Yisrael. That's a reference to Shimi ben Gera, which we're going to talk about in a second. So they're all coming together with Yehuda. And here are all the people of Israel, all the rest of the tribes, they come to Gilgal. And they see that Yehuda is coming across the Yarden together with David. So now they're all upset. And they said to the king, he says to him, what are you doing? You allowed our brothers Judah to steal you away from us. We were supposed to meet in Gilgal. The plan wasn't for them to cross the Jordan and come with you over the Jordan. The plan was to meet here. You took Shevet Yudah over to you on the other side of the Jordan and crossed the Jordan with them. Vayan kol ish Yudah l'ish Yisrael. So ish Yudah answered, the reason why they crossed the Yarden together with David first was ki karov ha-melech elai. Because, of course, the king is closer to us than he is to you. Milama zeh charalecha. Why should this be upset? Why should you be upset by this? Ala davar zeh chol achalnu min ha-melechim niset lanu. Did we eat at the king's cost? Did he gift us anything? Did he give us any protection? We don't have any special privileges. We're just his own tribe. So we went with him to come across the Yarden. Ish Yisrael are not satisfied with the answer. We have 10 times the claim to David than you do. We also have more right in David than you. We're 10 times your size, and we have more of a claim to David. We'll talk about why. Why did you reject us? Why did you make light of us? Was it not our word? Were we not the first ones to bring back the king? Right? In that first opening passage, it was we who wanted to bring back the king. And so the words of Judah were fiercer than the words of Israel. In other words, the conflict here is not over whether or not David will be king. They both agree that David should be king. The conflict is, you'll forgive me, almost, I don't know, symbolic, sounds silly, sounds almost childish. Right? Who goes first in line? But it's more than who's first in line. It's who crosses the Jordan with the king. There's something about crossing the Yarden. Ve'aviru et ha-melech v'et beito et ha-yarden. Ish Yisrael so upset was that Ish Yehuda had the audacity, or David had the chutzpah, to invite Ish Yehuda to come earlier and cross the Yarden with them so that Ish Yisrael comes late to the party. But the ceremony is in Gilgal, right? The crowning, the acceptance of David is in Gilgal. So what is it? Just a pre-party party? Like what are they worried about? Why is the Yarden so dramatic in this story? Okay, that's the overarching picture. And of course, the secondary picture, which is connected, is this conflict between Ish Yehuda and Ish Yisrael and David's part in instigating it, right? If I go back to the opening psukim, David was the one who invited Ish Yehuda to come across first, right? Why should you be late? Right? You should be first to the party, not last. What role is David playing in creating the tension between Ish Yehuda and Ish Yisrael? So I put that out there. There's basically two major questions we need to address in what I call the framework, the arc of the story. One is the conflict between Yehuda and Yisrael. That'll be our last piece that we'll address. And the other is the Yarden, which will be the first piece we'll address, B'ezrat Hashem, this evening. In the meantime, between Pasuk Yud Zayin and Pasuk Mem Aleph, three additional stories intersect.
Can I ask you a question first?
You may.
When David invited Yehuda to come, he didn't invite them to come across the Yarden, did he? I mean, he's not at fault for that. He just wanted them to be first. So they could have gotten to Gilgal first, and they would have gotten there first. I mean, or is it just understood that they would go over the Yarden to bring him back?
Maybe. Unclear. I would say unclear. He certainly seems to indicate a preferential treatment of Shevet Yehuda. And that's clear. He says to them, why should you be last, right? Lamatu achronim. You should be first. Then he said to them, atem atzmi uvsari atem, achay atem, atzmi uvsari atem, which leads Judah to think that they have a special status, right? You are my brothers, you are my flesh and blood, you're my own tribe. Unlike the rest of Israel, if the rest of Israel is going to accept me, certainly you and my own tribe. So he certainly gives them a sense of being of preferential status. And his invitation to Amasa is for sure a demonstration of preferential status, because Amasa was the captain of Avshalom's army. So we'll talk about that. And then on top of it, we get to the story of Shimon ben Gera, who also crosses the Yarden. Everybody's crossing over the Yarden to get to David in order to come back with David. Right? They all want the covered of walking across the Jordan River with David. I don't mean walking literally, that's a different religion. But I mean, they all want that piece of coming back with David. In walks Shimi ben Gera from Binyamin from Bachurim. Who is Shimi ben Gera? Quick reminder, who is Shimi ben Gera?
He came and met David as he was leaving.
Correct. He was that man from Binyamin who went and cursed David as David passed by Bachurim on his way out. He was the one who, as David was leaving Yerushalayim, cursed him and called him Ben Damim, called him a son of blood, and he blamed him for the death of the house of Shaul and all kinds of terrible accusations. And at the time, Avishai wanted to kill him, and David said to Avishai, no. You remember that part of the story, right? Okay. So they came, even though the rest of Shiftei Yisrael are coming later. Shimon ben Gera jumps the gun, and he, together with his people, come with the people of Judah to meet David. The elef ish imo me binyamin, brings 1,000 people from Binyamin. So this is not a small delegation. Right? This is Shimon ben Gera, 1,000 people from Binyamin, which is why they're called later Chatzi Ish Yisrael, right? Half, a large part of the tribes. But they joined with Judah. But Tziva, together with another individual who we recognize, Tziva Nar Bet Shaul. Tziva, who is Tziva? Tziva was the servant of the house of Shaul, who had taken the lands of Shaul after the death of Shaul in battle, and Ishbosheth. And many years later, David discovered that Yonatan had a son by the name of Mephibosheth, who was in exile, and he brought him back from exile, and he took the land away from Tziva and gave it to Mephibosheth. Tziva is I don't even know how to describe Tziva. A non-trustworthy soul. Let's be very kind. Mechameshet asar banav v'esrim avadav ito. Together with 15 of his sons and 25 and 20 of his servants, v'tzolchu ha'yarden lifnei melech. They crossed over the Yarden before the king, meaning they swam across. They went to the other side. And the ferry boat to bring the king over together with his whole house. So now you've got Shimon ben Gera, literally everybody else, Yehuda. There's almost three groups here. There's Yehuda, there's Shiftei Sulu are going to wait to Gilgal. The Shevet Yehuda come down to the Jordan to kind of escort David to Gilgal. And you have Shimon ben Gera, who jumps the gun and literally crosses over the Jordan. He's going to come back over the Jordan together with David. So this, I come back to this issue of crossing the Yarden as the single most significant factor in this story. That is what we need to unpack and understand. Okay, the story of Shimon ben Gera, less our issue for today. He asks David to forgive him. He pretends that he is very deferential to David, and everything was a mistake, and David wants to forgive him until Avishai ben Tzruya pipes up. Avishai, Yoav's brother, who was the one who wanted to kill him the first time, and now again he says, "Atachat zot lo yumat Shimi ki kilat Mashiach Hashem, should not Shimi ben killed, for he is the one who cursed the anointed one of God," referring to David. And David says, "What am I going to do with you, sons of Tzruya?" Okay, we're going to talk about that another year. This whole piece about Shimon ben Gera, we're going to unpack and then another year. But that's part one. Part two, Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth, he also encounters, and Mephibosheth, he has a whole conversation with Mephibosheth. But again, that story is not only not our issue for now, it's out of place, because that's happening in Yerushalayim. So that's here. The conversation is recorded here, but the story itself is actually later. That's completely chronologically out of place. So we're going to leave that completely. And the last story is the story of Barzillai HaGiladi, who comes down from Roglim. Barzillai Giladi was the Giladite who had brought provisions to David for his army when he was running before the battle with Avshalom. Meaning when he was a fugitive, Barzillai Giladi stood by his side, helped him survive in that critical moment. And David wants to repay him with kindness, offer him a place on the other side of the Jordan with him. Yomar HaMelech Barzillai, Ata Avor Iti, come over the Yarden with me, and I will provide you sustenance in Yerushalayim. Barzillai refuses, and he says, I'm 80 years old, what am I going to cross the Yarden? Right? You understand the Yarden then wasn't what the Yarden is today. Today you could be 80 years old and cross it in a heartbeat, because you can kind of just waddle across with the water up to your ankles. The Jordan then was a major river. So Ben Shmonim Shana Anochi Hayom, he's 80 years old, he doesn't want to go. However, he has a son, and Kimat Yafor Avdecha Et HaYarden Et HaMelech, your servant will just cross over the Yarden with the king. I'm just going to cross over with you, and then I'm going to come back home. Why should the king have to promise to sustain me forever? I'm just crossing the Yarden with you, and then I'm going home. And again, you have that same reference to crossing the Yarden. I'm going to go home and die in my city. And he says to him, I have a son by the name of Kimhan. Let him go with you. Okay, so in fact, v'yavor kol ha'am et ha'yaden v'hamelech avar. So in fact, when the king crosses over the Yarden, he takes with him this son of Barzillai. V'yishik ha'melech l'Barzillai, the king kisses Barzillai, and he sends him on his way. V'yavor ha'melech ha'gilgala, v'kiman avar imo. And he crosses the Yarden, comes to Gilgal, together with Kimhan, and of course, Am Yehuda, Viruat HaMelech, together with the people of Judah, and a portion of Israel, half or a portion of the people of Israel, meaning the tribe, the 1,000 people who came with Shimei ben Gera. And then the fireworks start. How dare you show up already with the entourage? You crossed the Jordan first. What? Oh, forgive me, but I mean, big deal. Cross the yard. It's like, what is going on here? So we need to take a giant step back and ask ourselves the question, what is the significance of the Yarden, the Jordan River at this moment? Not necessarily physically, because physically it's a river, but almost symbolically, the Jordan River played a critical role in the identity of the Jewish people and especially the leadership of Israel. And for that, we're going to jump back and do a quick survey of the role of the Jordan River in the course of everything we've studied in Tanakh till this time. Okay, so we're going to do a quick survey of the role of the Jordan River in the leadership, defining the role of Israel, the leadership of Israel in particular, from Chumash to Sefer Shmuel. Okay, so that's our goal for now. In the remaining time that we have today, here's the Jordan River on the map. Here's Gilgal where they're headed. Here is the Yabok River, which is where David was in Machanayim. And we are going to jump. All right, where does our story begin? Actually, let me start. Actually, go back to our text for 1 second. I want to come back to a text observation I made earlier and explain this phrase to me. People are having a big conversation about whether or not to reinstate David. And they're debating. And the debate revolves around, he abandoned us. He didn't abandon us. He fought our wars for us. But on the other hand, he fought against Avshalom. But Avshalom died. It's back and forth. In the midst of this conversation, the comment about David leaving the crown and leaving Yerushalayim uses the phrase, V'yata barach min haaretz. He's fled from the land. Barach min haaretz. So my question is an obvious one. Here is the kingdom of David. Here is the Jordan River. David went from Yerushalayim to Bachurim to Machanayim. And he's going to, right, Machanayim. Doesn't look like he left the land of Israel to me. Certainly didn't leave the kingdom of Israel. Right, Malchut Yisrael is the big green line over here. It's the green line in biblical terms. Very ironic to make it green, but anyway, that the leaving politics aside, Machanaim's over here. So what's this Jordan River? At that Barach Menor, it's all he did was cross the Jordan, and that's called. What about Reuven, Gad, and half of Manasseh? They live on this side of the Jordan. They were given this side of the Jordan. Are they not part of the land of Israel? Crossing over the Jordan is considered leaving Israel, Barach min haaretz? Understand the problem? Okay, so let's go back to, let's actually start with Sefer Yehoshua. We're going to do this out of sequence, so bear with me. We're going to do a little jumping around. Yehoshua Perek Aleph begins, I don't need that. Beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, set the scene. Where are Bnei Yisrael? Physically, where are Bnei Yisrael? When Chumash ends, where are they? When Chumash ends, where are they?
Well, Moshe wasn't allowed to cross the Jordan, right?
Correct. Previous parak, the beauty of this website is I can go from Maram Lamedalah to Yeshua Parak Aleph. V'yam Moshe Mi'arvot Mo'av El Har Nevo. Right? They're in Nevot Moab. They're on the plains of Moab. They're on the other side of the Jordan. That's where Moshe dies. God has anointed or appointed Yeshua as his successor, right? That's how Chumash ends. Yeshua is now the leader. Moshe has died. They're on Eber HaYarden. They're on the other side of the Jordan. They're at Arvot Moab. And Vayhi Acharei Mot Moshe Eved Hashem. Vayomer Hashem al Yeshua Benun. Mishuret Moshe Lemor. God comes to Yeshua and he says to him the following. Moshe Avdi Met. V'yata Kum Avo Et HaYarden. Oops. Don't like when it does that. Now, God says to Yeshua, Moshe, my servant, has died. It's time for you to assert your leadership, take over the reins, lead the people. All of that is defined by the phrase, Avor et hayarden hazeh. You and all the people with you. I will give you every place that the foot of your soul treads. I will give to you as your people, as your land, from the Midbar to the Lebanon, from the great river of the Euphrates and Har Prat to the and all Emeretz Chittim, which is to the modern day Turkey, and all of the, and to the Mediterranean Sea. All of that will be your borders. No one will stand against you. No one will oppose you. I will be with you as I was with Moshe. Be strong, be courageous. You will cause this people, enable this people to fight and to inherit this land, etc. Fine. All of that's defined by Avor et Hayarden, cross the Jordan River. Similarly, Yeshua then turns to the people. In Pasuk Yod, Vayitzav Yeshua Shetrei Am Lemor. Go through the camp and prepare them and say to them, Achina lechem tzedah, prepare for yourselves for food. Ki ba'od shloshet yamim atem ovrim et ha-yarden hazeh. You are going to pass over this Jordan River. And Reuben and Gad and half of Menashe, you have to remember your promise. You are also going to cross over the Yarden, and then you can come back to inherit the land that God has given you on the east side of the Yarden. Right? But the first thing you need to do is cross the Yarden. Fascinating. And Yeshua is going to have to split the Yarden the same way Moshe split the Yamsuf in a similar fashion in order to cross into the land of Israel. This notion that somehow everything starts by crossing over the Yarden. The problem with this is that if I go back to Bamidbar Lamed Bet, which is the story of Reuben, Gad, and Menashe, and the conversation with Moshe, right? Remember back when? That's in Parshat Matot. That starts with, there's a bunch of cities that that are going to be named here. Atarot, and Divon, and Yazer, and Nimran, Cheshbon, El Alel, Usvam, Unvoa, Va'on. All of these cities, bunch of cities. Where are all of these cities? Let me just do a quick map of this parak for you. Don't think I have it here. Right? No. So let me do a quick map of this parak for you, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Let's go to Shmuel Bamidbar. What did we say? Parak Lamed Daled. Is that what we said? Come on, behave. When technology behaves, it's very good. When it doesn't behave, it can be very frustrating. Lamed Dalet. No, Lamed Bet. Sorry. My user error. End user failure. Okay. Bamidbar Lamed Bet. Here we go. This map, which I told you is a Google Map engine with a biblical base, here's a modern map of today's map. Everything's in Hebrew. I'm not sure why, but okay. That's a modern map. Take out the modern map, and you have the biblical map of this parak. Parak Bamidbar Lamed Bet. The names of all these cities: Aroer, Divon, Kiryataim, Atarot, Cheshbon, Elale, Cheshbon, Nevo. All of these cities that I just read to you in that parak, right here, Atarot, Divon, Yazen, Nimrach, Heshbon, Elalei, Svam, Nevo, Ba'on, all of these cities, where are they? They're all here. Where's here?
East of the Yarden.
East of the Yarden, between the Yabok and the Arnon River. Okay, this is the southern border of Eretz Sichon, and the Arnon was the north, and the Yabok is the northern border of Eretz Sichon. All of these cities are in the territorial region of Sichon, which was now recently conquered by Israel in a previous chapter in Bamidbar. That's the context of this story. Reuven Gad had a lot of livestock. And they looked at this land of the Gilad and the Yazer, right? This land that I just showed you. And they saw this land as a land of grazing. This was green. It's not green today, but it was green then, right? Today it's on the map, it's all brown, but it was very green. So they come to Moshe, and they say to him, right, list of all the cities. This land that God gave us in the other side, that the God enabled us to conquer. Eretz Miknei, beloved Dechem Miknei, it's a land of livestock. Your servants have livestock. Therefore, Yutan et ha'aretz, im atzanechem enecha, yutan et ha'aretz hazot lavadecha lachuzah, al tavineinu et ha'yarden. We want to settle here. Don't force us to cross over the Yarden. And, of course, you know the story, right? So Moshe gets very upset with them because the last time a group of tribes tried to stay outside of the land of Israel was the story of the spies. And Moshe thought that that's what they were saying, and he gets very angry with them. Your brothers are going to go to fight the wars and the conquest of the land of Israel, and you're going to sit here. There's a lot to unpack in that sentence, but for now, I'm just going to read it. Why should you dishearten or discourage the hearts of the children of Israel from crossing over the land, into the land which God has given them? That's exactly what your brothers did in the sin of the spies. And God promised that they would not come into the land of Israel, and he forced them to wait into a generation in the desert. And he promised only Yoshua and Caleb that they would cross over the Yarden. But the rest of them died in the desert for a whole generation. And now, Pasuk Yudalad, V'inei kamtem tachat avotechem tarbut anashim chataim, you brood of sinful men, this is what you want to repeat? The sin of the spies? Now, whether they originally thought of this or whether Moshe kind of guilted them into it, it's unclear, but they immediately changed tone. We will build for our livestock, and we will build for our families. Our families will settle here, but we, the soldiers, the army, we will go nechaletz chushim lifnei bnei Yisrael. We will go as an army before bnei Yisrael. We will be first in line until they are settled in their land. And only then will we return to our homes. I'm not going to get into the famous drash about the sequence and priorities. That's not my issue for now. They make the offer to cross the Yarden, fight with the rest of Bnei Israel, and then come back. And Moshe accepts their offer. And he says, fine, if that's what you want to do, if you are prepared to fight to cross the Yarden and then come back, so be it. Vayomer alehem Moshe. Now listen carefully to the language, because Moshe introduces into the conversation not just the military, social, sociological, and political context of agreeing to be part of the rest of the children of Israel and conquer the land. He throws in theology. He throws God into the conversation. Vayomer aleihem Moshe, im tasuna et hadavar hazeh, im techaltzu lifnei Hashem lemilchama. If you will arm yourselves to go before God into this battle. V'yavar lachem kol chalutz et ha-yarden lifnei Hashem, and cross the Jordan, armed, ready to go before God, until he enables them to settle the land. And then, nichbisha ha'aretz lifnei Hashem, the land before God, shall be conquered and subdued. Then you can go back and settle in the land that God has given you as an inheritance. But if not, know that this is not going to happen. So back and forth this conversation goes, and he needs proof, and he says it publicly. I want to take one more sample text out of this parak, which is Pasuk Lamed Bet. Nachnu navor chalutzim lifnei Hashem eretz Kanaan. We agree to go to Eretz Canaan, the land before God. But our inheritance will be on the other side of the yard. You get a sense from this conversation, and you get an inkling of it, that there's something magical, and I use that term cautiously, about crossing the yard. And that there's almost a sense that even though Reuven and Gad are on the other side of the Yarden, they're in Eretz Sichon, but they're in a territory which is second class, maybe not quite the Eretz Lifnei Hashem, the land before God. Maybe the land before on the west side of the Yarden has a more spiritual connotation than the land east side of the Yarden. Maybe they weren't supposed to be there. Maybe it was an acquiescence or a concession to them. Unclear. But what is clear is that there's something about this Jordan River that not crossing it scared Moshe completely. Crossing it was a condition to be able to inherit anywhere else. Even though the boundaries of the land of Israel included Eifrayarden and included that territory, that was always part of the territory. The Gilad was part of the story of Shevet Menashe from the days of Ephraim and Menashe. But there's something about that moment of crossing the Yarden that made a impression and worried Moshe. And it should worry Moshe. As we see, it happens in Sefer Yoshua. That was exactly the perception that the 2.5 tribes on the east side of the Yarden and the tribes on the west side of the Yarden saw, generating into an extraordinary conflict, almost a flashpoint of conflict between the tribes east and the tribes west. It's almost as if this Jordan River becomes a dangerous symbol of a division, a rift, a fault line. And I'm not talking about the Syrian-African rift fault line that runs through it, but that's a different fault line, right? It almost becomes a fault line within the land of Israel between the tribes west and the tribes east. And that's exactly what happens in Sefer Yoshua. So we're going to go back to Sefer Yoshua, where God says to him, your story begins when you cross over the Yarden, what Moshe wasn't able to do. Everything east of the Yarden, Moshe conquered. The land of Sichon, the land of Og, right? Moshe conquered. But that wasn't the moment. Moshe wanted to cross over the Yarden. He wanted to enter into the Ha'aretz Asher Lifnei Hashem, the land that is before God. God said, no. There's something about that transition point. And that is what leads us to the last piece of this flash conversation, or actually second last, which is Yeshua Perek Chaf Bet. So we jump from the beginning of Yeshua to the end of Yeshua. In between, what did I skip? What did we skip in between Perek Aleph of Yeshua and Perek Chaf Bet? In one sentence, half a sentence, what is the substance content of all of Sefer Yoshua?
Battles.
The conquest of the land of Israel. What Moshe told Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, they would have to be part of until it's all done, and then they can go home. Right? So now, Let me just see if there is a map here. Yes. Oh, good. There's even a map here. Okay, here's Reuven. I like this map. Okay, I'm going to save this map. Reuven, Gad, half of Manasseh. This is all east of the Yard, east of the Jordan River. Okay, there's the Arbok, there's the Arnon, there's Penuel and Sukkot. Oh, this is a really good map. Okay, excellent. Okay, Yeshua Perachah Bet. You ready? Here's where the conflict begins. As Yikra Yoshua LaRuveni VaLaGadi VaChatzi Mateh. Two and a half tribes, Reuven, Gad, half of Manasseh. Yoshua calls them into a meeting, the leaders of them. And he says to them, Vayomer Alehem, you have been for the last 14 years, minimally 14 years, you have been loyal soldiers in this army. You have kept Moshe's commands to you, instructions. You have kept my commands to you, instructions. All these many years, you did not abandon your brethren. You obeyed the laws. And now, God has given rest to your brothers. The wars are over for the most part. I give you permission to go home. You've served your reserve duty of 14 years. You've served in the army. Okay, you can go home. Eretz achuzatchem, the land of your inheritance, which Moshe has given you on the east side of the Yarden, Reuven, Gad, and Menashe, be'ever ha'yarden. Then he warns them and cautions them, be careful, make sure that you observe the laws, observe the commandments that Moshe has commanded you, etc. I'm going to skip all of that. And so, v'yivarchem Yoshua, he blesses them, l'chatzi shevetam Menashe natan Moshe b'Bashan. Moshe gave half of Menashe the area of the Bashan, which is today the Golan Heights, and part of Syria. The other half of Manasseh is here on the left side. And then he says to them, they took their leave from Shiloh, which is in Ephraim. Shiloh's over here. And they begin to return lelechet el eretz hagilad, el eretz achuzatam asher nochazuba. So they're leaving Shiloh to head back to the area of the Gilad, to go back to their territory here. Okay, so far so good. Vayavo el Glilot Yarden. They come to the region around the Yarden. It's an interesting pun on the word Gilgal Glilot Yarden. They come to the region of the Yarden, which is in the land of Canaan. And they built a giant altar on the edge of the Jordan River. Don't ask me which edge, the east side or the west side. I don't think it actually matters. I can interpret the story either way. But they built a giant altar. Now remember, there's only one altar allowed, which is in Shiloh. And I suspect, based on the nature of the story, actually, I'm going to take back what I said before. I think it's actually on the east side of the Jordan. They cross the Jordan, and there they build the altar. Makes much more sense. Okay. So they built an altar. They just departed Yoshua. They'd spent 14 years serving in the army, and they left. They built an altar, giant altar, big altar. Everybody can see it on the edge of the Jordan River. Let's assume east side. Behold, the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, they built an altar opposite Eretz Canaan on the other side of the Yarden. El Eiver B'nei Yisrael. Okay, if you were the tribes of Israel, what would your reaction be? I suspect it wasn't going to be what their reaction was. Vayishma'u b'nei Yisrael, vayikalu kol adat b'nei Yisrael shiloh, la'alot aleihem la'tzava. It's time to gather them all up to go to war and fight those rebels, those the audacious rebels Reuven, Gad, and Menashe. How dare they? And we're going to go to war with them. First threat of the first civil war in Israel. But they send a delegation. They send a delegation to talk. And if you want to send a delegation to talk instead of to go to war, who's the most logical person to send? Vayishalchu b'nei Yisrael, b'nei Reuven, b'nei Gad, v'chatzi shevet Menashe, l'eretz Gilad, et Pinchas ben Elazar HaKohen. They sent Pinchas, because of course Pinchas is always good at settling the tension and lowering the intensity around a good conflict, right? No, that was a sarcastic moment. Okay. Pinchas ben Elazar HaKohen. And together with him, 10 princes, Vasaran Nesi'imimo, Nesi'echad Lebeit Av, one prince per tribe, representing all of the tribes of Israel. They come to Reuven, Gad, and Menashe, and they said the following. Okay, so now I have a confrontation. 10 tribes on the one side represented by the Nesi'im, heads of the 2.5 tribes on the east side of the Yarden, standing by this giant altar built on the edge of the Jordan River. And what does Pinchas say to them? Ama'at lanu et avon pa'or? Is the iniquity of Baal Peor not enough for you? Remember, Baal Peor was the story of Cosby and Zimri. That was where Pinchas got his famous, earned his fame as Tachat HaShekineh LaHashem, because he killed Cosby in an act of zealotry. Right? That was Pinchas' story. That also caused a plague, and tens of thousands died from that plague. But yeah, neged mandat Hashem. You're going to abandon God this day? You're going to abandon today, and who will God be angry at tomorrow? Us. And here's the clincher. What does Pinchas say to them? Ach im tmea eretz achuzatchem ivru lechem al eretz achuzat Hashem asher shechan sham mishkan Hashem. If your land is too unclean for you, then why don't you come back and live in the real land of Israel, where there's a real inheritance of God and there's a real tabernacle, and take in a portion with us, the real people of Israel. V'Hashem al timrodu, but do not rebel against God. How dare you build a mizbeach mi baladei mizbach Hashem Elokeinu? How dare you build your own altar other than the altar that's in the Mishkan? Which is where now we get to the crux of the issue. You created a competitive altar on the east side of the Jordan. How dare you do that? Then he accuses them of repeating the sin of Achan, accuses them of the sin of Baal Peor, accuses them of all kinds of things. But at the end of the day, what he's really saying to them is, you're on the east side of the Jordan. If you built yourself an altar, that's because you built, remember, you can only have one Mishkan and one altar. If you built yourself your own altar, what essentially have you done? You've proclaimed yourselves to be a separate nation with a separate God and a separate temple and a separate altar. You've used the Jordan River as a division and said, you're your people and we're my people. That's exactly what what Pinchas accuses them of doing. So they answered Pinchas. And their answer is as telling as the rest of the story. V'yanu b'nei Reuvenu b'nei Gad v'chatzi shevet ha-Menashe. Reuven, God, half Menashe, they spoke and they said the following. El Elokim Hashem, El Elokim Hashem, Hu Yodea, Bisrael Hu Yodea, Bimered, Bim Bamal, Bashem, Al Tishienu Ayom Hazeh. God knows, God understands. If we acted rebelliously, if we really did this, God is our witness, if we acted treacherously, then let God not save us today. We didn't act rebelliously. We didn't build the altar as an act of rebellion. We didn't even build the altar to bring sacrifices on it. So why would you build an altar if it's not to bring sacrifices? We built it because we were worried. We had an anxiety. We were anxious about what? Machar yomru b'nechem levaneinu lemor malachem v'lashem v'loka Yisrael. We were afraid that in another generation, your children would say to our children that we're a separate nation and that we have no share in the Mizbeach, in the Mishkan, in Shiloh. We were afraid that in another generation, your children would say to our children, Gvul natan Hashem b'neinu uv'nechem b'nei Reuven b'nei Gad et Yarden, that God put the Jordan River between us as a border, as a boundary, to separate us from the rest of the tribes of Israel. And therefore, we were afraid that your children would say to our children, Ein lachem chelek b'Hashem, that we have no portion in God. V'shbitu b'nechem et b'neinu, and your children might actually destroy us. Livoti yiroat Hashem. From fearing God. Therefore, we had a plan. What was our plan? You understand the irony of this concern. The irony of this concern is that they were 100% right and 100% wrong. They were 100% right that the tribes of Israel on the west side of the Jordan would accuse the tribes of the left side of the east side of the Jordan of being not part of the children of Israel. But they were 100% wrong in assuming that it would take a generation for that division to manifest itself. That division manifested itself in 3 weeks. And all they said, Naser lanu livnot et ha-mizbeach. All we wanted to do was build a replica of the altar. La la la, la la la, la la zabach, not for sacrifices, not for offerings. Ki edu b'neinu v'nechem. We built it as a monument. We built it as a testimony. We built it as to bear witness. You will come to us and say, we have no chelak in the land before God. And we will say, wherever the original of this altar is, that's our temple. That's where our Mishkan is. That's all we wanted to do. Not for sacrifices. God forbid that we should want to rebel against God. We built an altar so that your children could say to our children, are you part of the Jewish people? And we'll say, we're part of whatever temple nation worships a temple in a god in a temple that contains the original of this altar, because we were there and we saw it. You follow? That's what happened. But what the story reflects is the significance of the Jordan River in the mindset of the Jewish people. It doesn't matter that the kingdom expanded into the area of the Gilad and the area of the Bashan. It doesn't even matter that the area of the kingdom expanded into the area of Ammon, Moab, and all of Aram. The core of the Eretz Asher Lifnei Hashem, the land that sits before God, is the land that contains the Mishkan, or the Mikdash, the land that contains the Ark, and that is west side of the Jordan. That's where Moshe wanted to go. That's where Yeshua was told to cross in order to begin the conquest, the settlement of Eretz Canaan, the Gvulotah. And even though there are Israelites settled in all of this territory, right? There are Israelites settled in the whole region of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, and the whole area of the Gilad and the Bashan. But the Jordan River has its own status. And so when David is forced to cross the river to escape from Avshalom, from Yerushalayim, the mindset of the people of Israel is, V'yata barach min ha'aretz. He's run from the land. He's escaped. He's crossed the river. And now coming back, the symbol of returning to the leadership of Israel is crossing the river back to Gilgal. That transition, it's symbolic. It's not practical. It doesn't matter. You have to cross the river in order to get somewhere. It's not about crossing in order to get somewhere. It's about seeing the fact that his malchus is anchored in Yerushalayim. And if his malchus is anchored in Yerushalayim, crossing back over the Jordan River is the equivalent of leaving his throne behind and his garments of Malchus behind. And now, if you want to recrown him as king, the first step in that ceremony is to cross back, like Yoshua, just to cross back over the river. That's essentially the core of this moment. Ve'ata barach min aretz. He crossed the river. In order to return to his malchus, he's got to cross back over the Yarden. Now, who's going to go with him? Yehuda, Binyamin, Ish Yisrael, right? Who's going to cross with him? So they go to Gilgal. Why do they go to Gilgal? Why is the meeting point in Gilgal? Gilgal is a fascinating story. Gilgal is where Yoshua first puts up base camp when they enter into the land of Israel, right? When they cross the Jordan the first time, when they conquer Jericho, the first place they go is Gilgal, and they're there for several years. But 7 years, actually. But that's not enough. Right? That's not enough. Because they actually, here we're going to jump, right? Where Gilgal has another claim to fame. Anybody know what it is? I'm about to give it away. Anybody want to guess? Where was Shaul crowned king? Where was the ceremony to begin Malchut Yisrael? I give you three guesses. Vayomer Shmuel Good guess. Vayomer Shmuel Elam after the Battle of Yavesh Gilad. Remember the story of Yavesh Gilad? We talked about that. Yavesh Gilad was that little city on the other side of the Jordan in the area of the Gilad that Shaul went and defended when they were being threatened by Nahash, king of Ammon. A map here? Yeah. Here's Yavesh Gilad. And okay, same area, right? Sukkot, Gilad, Yavesh Gilad. Here is Ephraim. Further south is Yerushalayim. Gilgal is just around here. Right? More or less. You with me? So Yavesh Gilad, Shaul comes from Shevet Binyamin. He's sitting in Binyamin. He hears that Ammon, Melech Mene Ammon, had gone and threatened people of Yavesh Gilad. So he gathers all the people of Israel, gathers the entire army of Israel, the largest army that's fought to date, hundreds of thousands from north to south, all of the tribes of Israel, to go to fight against Ammon and defend the people of Yavesh Gilad. It's a massive moment. And when it's all over, Vayomer Shmuel El Ha'am, Shmuel says to the people, you see, this is your king. This is the leader. And therefore, it's time to go and put a crown on his head. L'chu v'nilcha ha-Gilgal u'nechadesh sham ha-melucha. It's time to go to Gilgal and to start the kingdom. It's the second ceremony, right? Shaul is crowned king twice. First time he's hiding amongst the baggage and he doesn't want to take the role. Then we have this story of the war with Yavesh Gilad, and then Shmuel says, "Okay, now you earned the crown, and so we're going to go back to Gilgal." So Gilgal has the status of, in fact, being a place where Malchus started. So it makes perfect sense for David to kind of restart, kickstart. Again, just as Shaul was crowned twice. He was crowned the first time when he was chosen. He was crowned the second time after the Battle of Yavesh Gilad. Well, here's David, crowned the first time, Yehuda and then Israel. He fought there for decades, Yerushalayim, etc. Then he had to go into exile. Why? Whole story about Sheb. Right? Then he had to go into exile. Battle of Avshalom. Battle in Machanaim. But now he's being crowned a second time. Now he's being re-crowned king of Israel. So he comes back almost the same place. Shaul started in Yavesh Gilad. David restarts in Machanaim, crosses the Jordan, and comes to Gilgal. Makes perfect sense. And that's where Yehuda jumped the gun. Crossed the Jordan first, came back with David, essentially declaring him as king before they got to Gilgal. And so by the time they got to Gilgal, David arrived in Gilgal already wearing his crown because they crossed the Jordan. They crossed the Jordan together with all of them, Shei Yehuda, together with the rest of representation of the tribes of Israel, I suspect they crossed the Jordan, David put his crown on his head, and then arrived at Gilgal. And that set them off in a tailspin. Okay. One more piece of the story that I want to have 7 minutes left. So let me add one more piece to the story. And the other piece of the story was, we talked about Yehuda and Reuben, Gad, and Menashe, and how concerned they were with the division of the Jordan River as a way of perceiving them as a separate tribe. Were they right? Was the fear that the geographic division of the Jordan River would separate these tribes from the rest of the tribes of Israel to the point where people might think of them as a kind of a second class or separate group of tribes? And the answer is, in the period of the Shoftim, prior to the Kingdom of Israel, they were 100% correct. And it's why it's so important to understand the role of the Melech. Let me stop sharing for a second, because I want to clarify this. We've talked about this before. The role of the king versus the role of the shofet. What's the difference between a melech and a shofet? Right? A shofet is not a judicial role. It's not a judge in the sense of the judiciary that we have today, you know, the shoftim that sit on the bench of a court. The word shofet almost, there are some suggest that the word shofet comes from a repronunciation of the word shevet. It's the difference between a tribal leader and a national leader. The shoftim were regional. They were tribal. What the Torah calls a nasi of every shevet, the Navi calls the shofet of each shevet. Shofet, shevet, you can hear the connection. In other words, the leader of the shevet was the shovet or the shofet. And he led the people. A shavit is a scepter. Right, all connected words. So the leaders of the tribes of Israel were regional. There's only two options for leadership in Israel at that time. Your only two models of leadership are tribal and national. We make the mistake of thinking that the options in Tanakh are between monarchy and democracy. You have to remember that democracy hasn't been invented yet. Democracy is not going to be invented for, I don't know, when is Plato in relation to the biblical arena? Okay? Centuries, if not millennia. The world in Tanakh isn't about the question of whether you have a king or you don't have a king. It's about whether you have a king or you have a shofet, whether your leadership is tribal or your leadership is national. That's the only question. And so when it's tribal, every tribe is on their own. And the potential for identification as a nation is much weaker when every tribe is living on their own, they're living in isolation, they're living geographically separated from each other. And if that's true about the tribes in general, Kal vachomer, it's true about the tribes east of the Jordan River and west of the Jordan River. That's exactly what they said. Gvulsam. God put a border between us. We're a border between us. It means we're two separate peoples. And you're the tribes of X, Y, and Z, and we're the tribes of A, B, C. And in the period of Sefer Shoftim, that plays out in a very dangerous way. There were three major civil wars in Sefer Shoftim. Right? Remember them? Gideon. And his war with Midian comes to the cities of Penuel and Sukkot, and he says, give us passage, give us food and provisions, etc. And Penuel and Sukkot, for this you need to see the geography. Let me just do this quickly. Actually, you can even start from Shirat Devorah. Remember Shirat Devorah, the battle of Devorah was in Emek Yisrael, which is in the north, But she has a whole song in which she sings about which tribes came and assisted and which tribes did not. And she's very critical of the tribes that didn't come to assist. Remember that? So what does she say? Which tribes did not come and join the fray? Says Devorah, the Sarai by Yisachar, princes of Yisachar were with Devorah. Yisachar came Barak, etc. But Biflagot Ruven, Gedolim Chikikelev, but in Ruven, they were having a conversation. We're fighting for our lives against Sisra. We're in Emek Israel fighting and defending ourselves. And Ruven, they're deliberating. Should we get involved? Shouldn't we get involved? It's not our name, it's not our tribe, it's not our people, it's the other side of the yard. They're worried, they're concerned. Chikikelev, they're deliberating. Well, by the time they finish deliberating, the war is over. Lama yashavda ben amishpatayim, she says to them. Why did you sit by the sheepholds? Lishma shrikot adarim, to listen to the whistling of your flocks. Liflagot ruven gudolim chikrei lev. They're searching for they're sitting there. Gilad be'evra yaden shechen. Gilad sat on the other side of the Jordan. Didn't bother coming to the battle. Why? They couldn't be bothered. Ruven, Gad, right, she'll sweep up to the Bashan in the area of Dan. Okay, and go from there. And you get to the story of Shimshon. Sorry, story of Gidon. If you remember Gidon is Emek Yisrael. Gidon fights here. Gidon then went and he ran across the Yarden in order to go and capture the people of Midian down there in somewhere in the middle of Saudi Arabia, which is where he catches up to them. That's the famous sword of Gideon. That the only Sheva to take the battle outside of the boundary of the land of Israel, gave the name to the campaign of the Mossad to track down the perpetrators of the Munich massacre. That operation was called the Sword of Gideon because of that reach of Gideon's army. He comes to Penuel and Sukkot, and he says to them, "Vayavo Gidon Yardena," he crosses over the Jordan. And he comes to the people of Sukkot and he says, "Tnu lanu kikot lechem. We need some bread. We're hungry. And the people are tired, they're hungry. We're running after Zevach and Samuna, the princes of Midian." So what did Sukkot answer? Vayomer sarei Sukkot, "Hakaf Zevach v'tzamuna ata biyadecha? Ki niten letzu'acha lechem? Should we give you bread? Have you caught Zevach and Samuna yet? When you catch them, come back to us, we'll give you bread." Meaning, we're sitting on the other side of the Jordan. We're exposed. We're not getting involved. Playing neutral. When you finish catching them and you free us from the Midian, we'll side with you. But in the meantime, we're playing neutral. We're talking about Israel against an enemy. What do you mean neutral? But that's what it is. The third is Yiftach. Remember Yiftach? Yiftach ha? Yiftach ha? Gil-adi. Yiftach comes from the Gilad. Yiftach is challenged by the people of Ephraim, who say to Yiftach, "Why did you go to war without us? Why did you claim all the victory?" And Yiftach says, "You know what? Because for all these years, you didn't want me as your king. You didn't want me as a leader. Now suddenly you show up. To hell with you." And he literally, you'll forgive the branch, he literally slaughters them. Yiftach slaughters them, 50,000 of them, to die on that day. Gidon, Yiftach. There's another, the Battle of Yavesh, of Pelegesh Begiva. There's that famous story. Pelegesh Begiva is but the story of Pelegesh Begiva, of course, go back to this. Where's this map? Oh, where's the map of Yavesh Gilad? Okay, can't find it though. The story of Pelegesh Begiva is the story of the tribes on the east side of the Jordan. And Yavesh Gilad is on the west side. The Yavesh Gilad is on the east side. Yavesh Gilad sided with Binyamin and or sympathized with them. And so the tribes of Israel, in addition to slaughtering Binyamin, went and slaughtered Yavesh Gilad. Bottom line. Until they establish a king of Israel, there are three civil wars in the book of Shoftim. Every one of them crosses the boundary of the Jordan River. Every one of them is some conflict between the tribes east and the tribes west. Either the Shofet comes from the east and he fights against the tribes in the west, or vice versa. Shofet comes from the west and he's fighting against the tribes in the east. the boundary, the border, the Jordan River was so symbolic of the need to unify the people of Israel that when they finally did and they brought the people together, the king of Israel was anointed at the edge of the river, at the Gilgal, as a message. This unites the tribes of Israel on both sides of the Jordan. And when David runs, he runs across the Jordan. When he comes back, he comes back across the Jordan and he comes back to Gilgal. That's the message. It's like crossing the Jordan was so critical because the message here is about the difference between a melech and a shofet. And that's where the story begins. How we deal with Judah and Israel and all of this and the rest of all the personalities in the story, we'll get to B'ezrat Hashem over the next few weeks. That is the story for tonight. Questions? We're good? All right. Well, for those who are on the East Coast, I appreciate you staying up an hour later than the rest of us. For those on the West Coast, enjoy the rest of your evening. And for those in St. Louis, Laila Tov.
See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Yes.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.